This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On About Books, we delve into the latest news about the publishing industry with interesting insider interviews with publishing industry experts. We'll also give you updates on current nonfiction authors and books, the latest book reviews, and we'll talk about the current nonfiction books featured on C-SPAN's Book TV. And welcome to About Books. In this episode, we'll talk with longtime book publisher Margie Ross, and we'll look at some of the latest books by current and former members of Congress. But first, let's start with this week's publishing industry news. Mitzi Angel is the new president of the publishing house Farrar, Straus & Giroux. She joins a growing group of women who have taken over leadership roles at large publishing houses, including Dana Kennedy at Simon & Schuster, Lisa Lucas at Pantheon, and Adrian Vaughn at Bloomsbury USA. In other news, Reuters reports that French legislation is taking aim at Amazon's shipping costs to customers in the country. Currently, French law prohibits discounting the price of new books and free shipping. Amazon charges 1 cent to get around that, and the new legislation would set a minimum delivery fee. The French Ministry of Culture commented, quote, "This law is necessary to regulate the distorted competition within online book sales and prevent the inevitable monopoly that will emerge if the status quo persists." Amazon argues that the law will hurt customers in rural areas of France. In other news, performing artist Solange has started a lending library of rare books by Black writers and artists. The St. Huron Library Collection, named after Solange's studio, contains 50 books that are available on a first-come, first-served basis. The inaugural collection has been selected by Rosa Duffy, who owns the Atlanta bookstore for keeps. For more information on Solange's new bookshop, go to sthuron.com. And according to NPD BookScan, print book sales were up close to 3% last week. They are up almost 11% year to date. Well, joining us now to offer her thoughts on the current state of publishing is longtime Regnery president and publisher Margie Ross. Margie, when did you leave Regnery and what are you doing these days?
Well, thanks for asking, Peter. I left Regnery. I stepped down in January of 2020 and moved to the country in Central Virginia and started my own little book publishing consulting business.
And what kind of authors are you working with? Are you working with publishers?
I am working with both. Actually, I'm working with publishers and authors. It's a lot of fun. I get to spend more time doing the part of book publishing that I really love, which is helping authors make sure their books are impactful and interesting and relevant and compelling and well-positioned for their brand. And I get to spend all my time working with publishers and authors on developing great books.
Well, your 20 years at Regnery, who are some of the authors that you publish?
We published pretty much every thought leader and celebrity author you can think of on the conservative side of the aisle. So that includes David Limbaugh, Dinesh D'Souza, Newt Gingrich, Dennis Prager, Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, Laura Ingram, Molly Hemingway, Sebastian Gorka, David Horowitz, Mark Stein, Mark Levin. The list is long. And it was an amazing opportunity for me to work one-on-one with so many influential, interesting, provocative authors.
Well, one of the authors that you published that you didn't mention was Donald Trump.
We did publish Donald Trump, published a book called Time to Get Tough, which really set the stage, honestly, for his presidential run. We published that back in 2011, I think, when he kind of flirted with the idea of running and then decided not to. But that was the beginning of him speaking out on sort of national and international political issues.
Now, Margie Ross, in a previous conversation that you and I had, you mentioned that once he declared in 2016 he was running for president, that you went back and read his old stuff and you saw no discrepancies in positions.
Well, you know, that's such an interesting thing. The reason I went back, honestly, and read his old stuff is because when he declared that he was going to run, we thought, well, we published this great book. Maybe we should publish the paperback edition. That seems like a good marketing and business decision at this point. And so we thought, well, maybe we'll have to update a lot of it. Maybe we'll have to change a lot of things. And it was remarkable to me going back to that book, which had been written 3 or 4 years earlier. And there was nothing that he had said then in 2011 that he wasn't still saying in 2015 during his campaign. That really impressed me. And it's, as we know with politicians, it's not always true, but he's not your conventional politician. So that's just one more way that he broke the mold.
Was it tough for Regnery to be unapologetically conservative and to stick to that principle?
I think I would say no. I think it's tougher to try to play to a lot of different audiences. It's tougher to not know who you are and to not lean into your brand. It's much tougher to not be clear about who your audience is and who your target market is. We, as you said, we're unapologetically conservative. Most of the people who work at Regnery have been and are conservative. And so I think we are able to promise authors and readers and deliver to authors and readers a kind of an understanding of the market, a rapport with the market, an empathy with the market that very few other publishers have.
Well, Margie Ross, ever since leaving Regnery, has been sending out a weekly newsletter. You can read it at margieross.com. Do you feel a little bit unleashed, or is it the same things you were saying as publisher?
I probably feel a little bit unleashed. There's nothing that I'm saying now that I didn't think as a publisher. And so I haven't sort of changed my point of view. But it's certainly true that I have more latitude and more flexibility running my own shop. And that's, I'm sure, true for anyone. So my blog has been a sort of a passion play for me. And as you said, it's actually on MargieRossConsulting.com. And every week, almost every week, sometimes I miss a week, I try to speak out on something that I find interesting, that I hope other people will find interesting, that's kind of at the nexus of publishing and media and current events and culture.
Well, in one of your blog posts, you talk about cancel culture, or you talk about that relatively frequently, but
right.
I want to read a quote to you and have you walk us through this. This is from Margie Ross. Quote, "No matter how much you try to duck for cover, sooner or later the woke police will find you. No matter how far you run, you cannot hide."
Sad but true. And I think I felt compelled to say that because I think there are still a lot of people who think, well, if I simply keep my head down, or if I simply kind of say the right thing and just be what I would consider to be a nice, kind person, I can get along. I can, I won't be canceled, but I also won't be vilified, marginalized, attacked. And I don't think that's true. I think, unfortunately, there are, culture has gotten to a place where it's not enough to just keep your opinions to yourself. Increasingly, there's a demand, at least for people who are public figures and people who are, who, you know, other people listen to, whether they're influencers or authors, there's a demand, there's pressure to endorse a particular narrative, not just fail, you know, not just be quiet if you don't agree. And that's a very, very dangerous place for us to be. And I think it is a challenge to publishers and other people in the media to have the courage of their convictions and realize that, honestly, they might as well say what they think because they're going to be punished for not agreeing with things they, you know, that they find reprehensible.
So, Margie, why do you think Vice President Mike Pence or Senator Josh Hawley would go to Simon & Schuster and go through several extra hoops rather than being published by a Regner?
There are, of course, I don't know either, you know, in either case specifically, but there are two kind of obvious reasons that come to mind. One is hope that they can navigate their way through a very liberal, very woke culture at the big publishing houses, that they can navigate their way through and still be able to get their message out. And the other answer is money. I mean, unfortunately, there are, for the biggest celebrity authors, the New York publishers often still will pay a very big advance. And that's not to say that Regnery hasn't paid big advances. We have, but in some cases, they will overpay. New York will overpay for authors because they like the idea of the celebrity on their list. Although, you know, I think that is changing as well. And I think there are, as we have seen recently, there are a lot of big celebrities, Donald Trump being number one, big celebrity authors that New York has said they won't publish. And so I think it's my belief is it's incumbent upon all authors to ask, is this a partner that I feel has enough integrity to work with? And in a lot of cases, I think the answer might be no.
Well, in one of your blog posts, you talked about the Mike Pence and Simon & Schuster connection and the fact that he was going to be rigorously edited in his writing.
I think two things about that. I think he may well be rigorously edited, but I also think that very public declaration by the folks at Simon & Schuster that he was going to be rigorously edited was very consciously made, directed at their most progressive, most left-leaning fans and employees. I think they said it to try to placate or reassure the people who didn't like the fact that Simon & Schuster was publishing Mike Pence, no matter what he said. And there was a big petition that was circulated at Simon & Schuster against the idea, protesting the idea that they were publishing a book by the former vice president of the United States. And so I think a large part of that proclamation that he was going to be rigorously edited was to say, don't worry, we're going to force him to stay in within these very tight guidelines, which, you know, as an author, I would find both insulting and worrisome.
We're talking with Margie Ross, former Regnery president and publisher, on About Books, our look at the world of the publishing industry. Margie Ross, you wrote another piece called The Big Lie, and it was about the New York Times Book Review. What was that about?
Well, this is a story that is not actually a new story for the insiders in the conservative book publishing world, but unfortunately, it's news to most people who, you know, are just consumers of books. And that is that the New York Times bestseller list is an editorial product. And they have actually claimed that it's an editorial product. The problem I have with that is it's supposed to be simply a data-driven list, and it's not. And so Regnery experienced time and time again a situation where a book that had indeed sold the most copies, more copies than any other book in the country for a given week, which should have pretty straightforwardly meant that was the number one book, number one best-selling book, did not appear as the number one best-selling book on the New York Times list. And in fact, sometimes didn't appear at all on the list. And that is, one of, unfortunately, many, many, many examples, increasing numbers of examples of the media irresponsibly, in my opinion, distorting the news.
So, Margie, when it comes to conservative books and awards, how are they treated? Pulitzer Prizes, National Right. Book Award, Book of the Year, etc.
They're ignored. They're largely ignored. They're marginalized. I mean, it's very, very rare that you will see a conservative book win any sort of award where there is, a sort of editorial discretion and judgment, as opposed to simply looking at the sales numbers or the quality of the work. So when I say editorial discretion, I mean when somebody subjective can put together their list, and of course that's what an award is, their own politics and their own worldview enters in. And unfortunately, I'm not sure there's anyone with a conservative worldview who's participating in any of these book awards, who is a judge for any of these book awards. I haven't been able to find one. And so what you get, once again, is the impression that is made for readers and consumers that there aren't any good conservative books, or that they're of lower quality. That's just another sort of insidious bias that lives within the book world. And it forces conservatives to have to work a little bit harder to find the books that resonate with them.
Well, your most recent column is about Publishers Weekly and its list of best reads.
Yep, this is just, it's interesting when you talk about, it's interesting to me to talk about what it means to have conservative or liberal fiction. Because a lot of people say, well, what is that? I mean, it's just, they're just stories. And so in a lot of cases, one of the most insidious types of bias is the promotion, the ceaseless, relentless promotion of fiction with a very liberal, progressive worldview, set cast of characters, set of values. And that's what we're seeing in PW's latest top 10 books, where there isn't a single book in the top 10 that features a white male protagonist. They're just gone. They're canceled out. They're erased from the landscape. I'm a big fan of having strong female characters. That's great. But the idea that there are zero strong male characters, especially white males, is unfair to every reader. And it certainly sends a message to young readers that there are no role models, there are no heroes when it comes to white men.
And to quote Margie Ross one more time, virtue signaling is fracturing our society.
That's exactly right. It's ironic to me that the folks who claim to want inclusiveness, who claim to want to heal the racial divide, and who point at conservatives and Trump as the culprits in creating the partisan divide, are the first in line to identify people by race, are the first in line to want to separate our country and our culture rather than finding the things that bring us together. And that's one of the things that a great book can do. It can bring people together with, you know, human values and human heroism and courage and emotion that everyone shares, rather than trying to, you know, balkanize and marginalize, you know, conservatives.
And joining us on About Books is Margie Ross, longtime president and publisher of Regnery Books, and now in business for herself at MargieRossConsulting.com. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
And this is the About Books program and podcast on Book TV and C-SPAN. We look at some of the latest publishing news and nonfiction books. Well, each year, there's a slew of new books by former and current members of Congress, and this year is no exception. Here's some of the latest. In Two Roads Diverged, former Republican Congressman and Governor of South Carolina, Mark Sanford, weighs in on the future of his party. Former Democratic Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska focuses on the lack of bipartisanship in the Senate and offers his thoughts on how to restore it. His book is called Death of the Senate. And in The Clock and the Calendar, former Republican Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia offers a firsthand account of President Trump's 2019 impeachment hearing. Republican Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio reflects on President Trump's tenure in Do What You Said You Would Do. Democratic Congresswoman Charisse Davids also has a new book out. The Kansas Congresswoman reflects on her life and path to Washington. It's a children's book, and it's called Charisse's Big Voice. And finally, in Midnight in Washington, California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff recounts his experiences as leader of the first impeachment trial of President Trump. Congressman Schiff recently spoke about his book on our author interview program afterwards. Here's a portion.
If Kevin McCarthy were ever to become speaker, essentially Donald Trump would be speaker. He would not disagree with him ever. And you would have an outside party effectively running the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. and an ethical one to boot. The story, as you know, that I tell in the book, I told because I think it's so characteristic. McCarthy and I were sitting on a plane flying back to Washington. This was in 2010. The midterms were about 6 months away, and we were having an idle conversation about who was going to win the midterms. And I said the Democrats would win, and he said the Republicans would win, and the movie started, and I was relieved to to escape to the movie. And we landed. I thought nothing of the conversation, and we went our separate ways. And that night, unbeknownst to me, he did a briefing for the press in which he told the press that everybody knew the Republicans were going to win the midterms, that he sat next to Adam Schiff on the plane, and Adam Schiff admitted Republicans were going to win the midterms. And so I didn't learn about this till the morning when the newspaper came out, and I was just aghast. I was astounded, and I sought him out on the House floor, and I said, Kevin, first of all, if we're having a private conversation, I thought it was a private conversation, but if it wasn't, you know I said the exact opposite of what you told the press. And he looks at me and he says, yeah, I know, Adam, but you know how it goes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Kevin, no, I don't know how it goes. You just make mm-hmm. stuff up, and that's how you operate, because that's not how I operate. But that is how he operates. And you cannot have someone with such little regard for the truth serving as the Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. And indeed, this is, I think, one of the most destructive thing of the last several years. Now, McCarthy was ahead of his time mm-hmm. in his lack of devotion to the truth, but over the last 4 years, there's been this relentless assault mm-hmm. by Trump and his acolytes on the truth itself, mm-hmm. Probably best expressed by Giuliani, who said the truth wasn't truth, and Kellyanne Conway, who said that they were entitled to their own alternate facts. If we can't agree on very basic facts, if we don't have the same shared experience, mm-hmm. democracy doesn't work.
And speaking of Congress, Book TV recently had the opportunity to sit down with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell to get a look at his reading list.
Not surprisingly, I tend to tilt toward American history, much of it political. But actually, one book I just finished was not about politics. It was about the history of the polio epidemic from beginning to end. It came out in 2006, actually won a Pulitzer Prize. And as a polio victim myself, I have always had a kind of special interest in it. And I thought with the pandemic going on, there were some lessons there, particularly with regard to vaccines. And one of the things we've been preaching lately is get vaccinated. And of course, one of the big differences between the situation we find ourselves in now and polio is it took 70 years to come up with two effective vaccines for polio. Our marvelous country and our marvelous pharmaceutical industry came up with three effective vaccines in less than 1 year to give us an opportunity to get past the pandemic.
And you can watch Senator McConnell's entire interview about his current reading list at our website, booktv.org. Now, here's a look at some of the books being published this week. Hillary Clinton's advisor, Huma Abedin, recalls her life and career in both/and. Economist and President Trump's former trade advisor, Peter Navarro, looks at the start of the corona pandemic and the 2020 presidential election. His book is called In Trump Time. And an entertaining race, Georgetown University professor Michael Eric Dyson examines the role of race in America. And also being published this week, a new book by former Republican Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He argues that anti-American beliefs are gaining traction within the United States. His latest book is called Beyond Biden. And in The Broken Constitution, Harvard Law professor Noah Feldman describes how Abraham Lincoln viewed the Constitution. And Fox News' Brian Kilmeade looks at the relationship between Lincoln and Frederick Douglass in The President and the Freedom Fighter. Those are some of the new books being published this week. You'll see them on Book TV. Well, each week, Book TV produces a program called Afterwards. And on this week's episode of our author interview program, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy argues that corporate America is signing on to, quote, woke culture only to increase profits. He discussed his book with Harvard University economics professor and former George W. Bush economics advisor, Greg Mankiw. Here's a little bit of their conversation.
I think that there's something to be said for really exploring the way in which maybe wokeness can stand on its own two feet when it isn't intermingled with capitalism. A big part of what I take aim at in the book isn't just the woke ideology in and of its own right, but its merger with capitalism, which actually taints both the progressive values that corporations are asked to be stewards of, as well as tainting corporate purpose in and of its own right as well. And so that's actually what the heart of the book is about, more so than criticizing one end of the political spectrum or the other.
And that was author Vivek Ramaswamy. Now, Afterwards airs every Sunday on Book TV. And you can watch all previous episodes at our website, booktv.org. And it's also available as a podcast at C-SPAN's new app, C-SPAN Now. Finally, here's some of the best-selling nonfiction books this week, according to the New York Times. Now, topping the list is a book that we won't be covering on Book TV, and it's musician Dave Grohl's memoir, The Storyteller. After that, To Rescue the Republic, Fox News host Bret Baier's look at President Ulysses S. Grant. Next are Ron and Clint Howard, who reflect on their acting life in Hollywood in The Boys. And that's followed by Peril, The Washington Post's Bob Woodward and Robert Costa's report on the transition between the Trump and Biden administrations. And wrapping up our look at some of the New York Times best-selling nonfiction books is Midnight in Washington. That's California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff's argument that the Trump presidency has weakened America's institutions. And that's a look at this week's publishing news and the latest nonfiction books. Thanks for joining us on About Books. And a reminder that About Books is available as a podcast at C-SPAN's new app, C-SPAN Now, or wherever you get your podcasts.